Welcome everybody back to the Mod Pod. It has been a while. I'm honestly, I can't even remember the last time we did a podcast. I think it was about 3 weeks ago or so. I mean, some things have come up, and I'm not going to lie, it's been very hard to just find the energy to talk about our country right now. I don't even know how to put it into words, but we are here 2 days before Christmas, actually. And I'm going to have my co-host Paul Birdsall join with me in a second. But yeah, we're here 2 days before, 2 days before Christmas. I wish I had some good news to deliver, but I mean, it's not all bad, but not much has changed. Not much has changed on the political front. Our boy Donald Trump still has not conceded, which isn't really that big of a surprise, but his, or I guess for bad, closing in on him and his attempts to overthrow the election. And that's just part of the problem. But before we get into that, as always, let me introduce my co-host, Paul Birdsall. Paul, how you doing?
Well, I think my blood pressure has been lower than it has in weeks. Other than that, I mean, I was going to say, with everything else that goes on, I'm doing about as well as I can.
Yeah, and I just, that on my end, with me personally, my concern is that nobody knows what the hell is going on. And to kind of dial it back to what, like 2 episodes ago, who is running the country? Who is running the country right now?
Nobody, and as of right now, nobody.
Our president is at a standing beef with his own party. And everybody was trying to work together for the stimulus bill, and he's opposing it. We'll get to that. But first thing first, as always, we try to start with something light. In combing random news topics today, I saw that COVID has now officially reached every continent in the world, including Antarctica. And, of course, my first question was, how the hell does COVID get to Antarctica?
Oh. Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I was terrible at science. So I'm probably the wrong person to try to build that explanation. But I think it's something where you see how far it's spread, and you still see that there are people out there who are very conspiratorial about the whole thing and how serious it is. It's like it's reaching the farthest corners of the earth like this. Can we all like come to an agreement now that it's serious? Can we do that? Because I feel like we're not really even there yet.
36 people in Antarctica tested positive for COVID. Why are there 36 people in Antarctica? How? I'm so confused.
It's those research stations that have been there since the 90s. I mean, it's just one of those things where I think of all people, like, they're the ones who are the most, you know, isolated. And if it's reaching them, I think that's kind of like where they're peeking their head out going, like, guys, what the hell's going on out there? Like,
there
we're minding our own business like we have for the past 20 years.
There are people that I see articles on where they've been on islands and doing, like, nature retreats and things like that, and they come back and they're like, wait, what's going on? You telling me that Antarctica is that up to date? They got COVID, man?
I'm guessing it is.
But speaking of the severity of COVID, obviously, I think everybody's well aware that the cases are going up. And there's really no joke in that. It's not funny at all. Me personally, COVID has entered my family stream, not my house, but my extended family. I got an aunt that tested positive and a cousin that tested positive. And, honestly, you know how I am with my family. I don't care if he hears it or not. But he thought it was fake and calling it a hoax about 6 months ago, and now he's got it and his mom got it. So I'm like, at some point, we've got to take this seriously, man. We've got to take it seriously. Operation Warp Speed has taken place, and everybody who is anybody that has status is getting the COVID vaccine. Can't tell you how many of the frontline workers are getting it. I've seen a couple people that I know personally that have gotten it, but I've also seen more senators and celebrities getting the vaccine before people who are working in these hospitals. And what's more American than basically politicizing health? I don't know how else to put it, man.
Well, keep in mind, too, one of the most frustrating things about that, and it's interesting you had kind of brought up sort of the very personal way that this is kind of affected, like how it's gotten involved with your family, because I feel like, as I've reiterated before, until it starts directly affecting people you know, in a lot of people's minds, it'll always be this fanciful thing that it's affecting other people. And you see it just as well as I do, like certain unnamed people who I won't reference specifically on this show, who I've seen post statuses about where they talk about not letting the virus control your life and how the media intentionally exaggerates the numbers and stuff like that. So it's like we can't even get any kind of universal view on this thing. You have some people, or at least the majority, who are taking it seriously, but you have a sizable minority of people who believe the whole thing is the disease itself isn't that serious. And you have a whole other bunch who are like, well, you know, it's serious, but the death toll is being grossly exaggerated and it has like a really high survival rate, where it's like, I feel like until it starts to directly affect people that you know, that you can physically interact with and you can physically see it for yourself, a lot of people just aren't going to take it seriously like that. And,
yeah, and
that's the most frustrating part of the whole thing.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things that go into feeding the fear of trusting the vaccine and things like that, which I'll speak on it from an African American standpoint in a little bit. But I've long said that I don't understand why people look at COVID. They say things like, well, I don't know anybody that got it, or people are not dying from it, it's not that serious, yada, yada, yada. And I made this statement before, like off the record, I don't know anybody that has AIDS or HIV. I don't need to have AIDS or HIV to experience it to know that it's very serious. I don't need to see people die from it to know that it's very serious. I don't want AIDS or HIV. COVID should be treated the same goddamn way. Why do you got to get COVID, or why do you have to know somebody that has COVID or know somebody that died from COVID for you to take it seriously? That's just so silly to me. And the fact still remains that there's not enough information out there about this virus that people know long-term effects, short-term effects. Right now, she had COVID. She was COVID positive about 3 or 4 months ago. She is still dealing with issues related to the COVID positive diagnosis. Yes, she's alive. Yes, she's breathing, but she has complications because of that. Her life is forever changed because of that. And granted, I don't know if she took it serious or not. I'm assuming she did. She's very health conscious anyway, but like, she still has like shortness of breath. She still gets dizzy randomly. Like, it's not blood pressure related or anything. She has all these ailments and symptoms. She used to be perfectly healthy, man. And she got COVID. She went to the hospital. She stayed there for a week. They sent her home. And she's had complications since she got out the hospital. And it's all COVID related. And it's one of those things where I hate that it has to be that close to me, but I feel like there's little news stories out here about how it's affecting people differently. And I think that's ultimately what scares me the most about it, is that my experience with it might not be like your experience. Like, we've seen and saw had stories how Trump survived it. He's probably the most unhealthiest person that we know, and he survived it with freaking drugs that were not even authorized to be used yet, you know, like in steroids and all these other combinations, like a concoction basically to save his life. But that it's the same thing we said last time when we talked about that. The average American doesn't have that. And I hate to look out on our country and see the realization in a lot of people's eyes that all these people that they've been backing politically don't give two shits about them. They do not care. Republicans, Democrats, at the end of the day, it's about their personal interests, and it's never been about the country. If it was about the country, we wouldn't be having this show, honestly. We wouldn't be having this show.
No, and that's true. And I think at least to start with, to your point, I mean, you know, at least when it comes to, you know, political self-interest, I was having a discussion with my brother today where I think he was mentioning the fact, he's like, you know, that there's a whole program when it comes to, you know, worst case scenarios with the government where, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the people in power will get taken care of at the expense of the rest of us, you know, to ensure that at least there's a stable government in place. And, you know, we're kind of seeing that a little bit now, especially with the release of the vaccine, where it's like, yeah, like the healthcare workers are getting it, but we're also making sure that like all the politicians are taken care of, which is like, oh, thank God, you know, because, you know, the rest of us are just kind of left in limbo. But, you know, the thing that's the most frustrating with even the most basic things to do, like the mask and basic hygiene, and what a lot of people don't understand, and people still are misunderstanding the masks, like the masks aren't a cure. It's like no one said that they were. The masks are to protect other people. Because like you said, you know, there are people who, like you or I, may have a good immune system where we get COVID and we may be asymptomatic and it won't affect us and it'll just pass like, you know, any kind of normal disease. But even then it's like, we're wearing the masks, not for us, but for the people who are trying to live their lives, who maybe don't have the same type of immune system or have pre-existing conditions. Like that's the part of it that's the most frustrating, is that this is a situation where we really are not only trying to take care of ourselves, but we're also trying to look out for other people at the same time. And we're like, we suck at doing that. Like, we're terrible at doing that, at going with that balance. And it's such a frustrating thing because, you know, you always hear people talking about, like, we need to be nicer to each other and we need to be more civil to each other and we need to remember we're all in this together, but then they will literally push back against measures that are aimed to fulfill those exact same prophecies. Like, that's what the masks are for, are to make sure that it's like, hey, we are all in this together. So a bunch of us have to go through this, you know, pain in the ass kind of, you know, addition to our lives with making sure we wear masks when we go outside, when we go into stores, for the benefit of everybody. But there's some people who just don't want to do that, even though it is literally the bare minimum of what you could do.
I was in the store today and my mask broke. it was almost comical, man. Like the little strap on the side popped because I was like, I was stretching it to like put it on my ear again and it popped.
Yeah.
And it was like the store got so quiet. Everybody was like, and I was like looking around like, man, there's a dude 2 feet behind me without a mask. And y'all looking at me. But I ended up getting another one anyway. But now I actually carry a spare mask in my back pocket. But we honestly as a country have never really looked out for one another unless it was
a tragedy.
Or a tragedy, which you would think this would be a tragedy, but for some reason it's not. Some reason it's an infringement on our rights, but everything else is a tragedy. But that's not what we should be about as far as morality goes. We already know our compass for morals in America points to wherever the money is.
Yeah, it does. Although I think you also have to consider too, like, and I think this is what to me is the most frustrating thing, is that whenever it comes to people trying to, you know, act in the name of patriotism like this, you know, it's always a hollow thing. Like, congratulations, you guys are defying a completely voluntary thing that holds absolutely no monetary fine consequences or jail time consequences. Like, we always choose to take those stands on, you know, standing up for our rights as patriots when there really is no consequence to it. You know, that to me is always mind blowing. It's like you don't look tough doing this. You just look stupid.
Yeah, you really do, and yet we still deal with that on a regular basis. I was in the today, and somebody was in there without a mask, and there's signs everywhere that tell you to put a mask on. And honestly, we can't even depend on people to enforce that, because we've seen so many stories or heard so many stories of people doing just the stupidest things to people, just asking them to put on a mask, like, because, well, that's what their job asks them to do. And I don't expect anybody that's getting paid anywhere under $40 an hour to really risk putting their life on the line for something as stupid as telling you to put your mask on. So, I'm not even worried about man.
It's also the argument, and I hate this argument when they talk about, you know, like the arguments about rights. It's like, well, those stores and those store owners are acting with their rights to run their stores how they want. And if they want masks, they're free to do it. You have the freedom to choose wherever you want to shop. You don't have to shop there. Mm-hmm. You can choose any other means to do it. But it's like, it's never about freedom. It's that same selfishness. Because it's like, what you're really saying is, you don't want the choice. It's just, you're saying, I don't want to play by the rules everybody else is playing by. You know, the snowflake method. I need to be treated special. I don't have to do this. I shouldn't have to do this. You know, like, that's what it is. It's not freedom. It's all BS. We choose the dumbest moments to do that.
Yeah, I posted this thing on Twitter, from Twitter, that was like, Americans can't make up their mind. You know, you didn't want to wear the mask.
Yep.
You don't trust the vaccine. It's like, well, what the hell do you want? Make up your mind, you know? And that's how I feel too. But talking about the vaccine and the mistrust. So there is a lot of misinformation. I mean, it's my show, so I don't have a problem with saying that. Honestly, I don't trust the Trump administration, and it's not necessarily about Trump. It's when I say the administration, I'm talking about the people who are in charge of overseeing the making and the production and authorizing the use of the vaccine. I don't trust them to really take into consideration proper protocol for testing, basically. So, yeah, I'm not eager to jump out in front and be like, test me, go ahead, or you know, give it to me first. You know, I'm not that eager. However, I do understand the need for a vaccine and things like that. And I still think that people who are higher risk obviously should get priority, and not people who are considered like important, other than the president-elect and their staff, like, you know, those people, sure. But like, who was it? Lindsey Graham and what's my boy from Florida that I hate? The clown dude.
Oh, Rubio. Oh.
Yeah, like, those guys don't need. Basically, what I take offense to the most is that they were some of the people who were spreading the crap about it not being real. It was a hoax and this and that. And then they're posing for pictures. And I get that people are asking political figures and people of influence to take the vaccine to instill trust. But in the same breath, a lot of these people have been downplaying the actual virus. I don't think they should get first dibs on the vaccine. And frontline workers right now, and I'm not talking about like people like me who I'm considered essential, but I'm not a frontline worker. I'm talking about the people in the hospitals and the people taking care of the patients. They need the vaccine, you know? And I'm not going to lie, man. I've heard some horror stories from nurses that make me kind of question our society in general, man. I've heard stories of nurses who test positive for COVID being sent back to work on COVID units because they can't spread it to the people who already have it, so they still have to work through it. And if that's true, obviously I'm not investigating it, but if that's true, that is awful, man. That is so awful.
Yeah, and that's what makes me – that's what gets me so infuriated, I think, about, you know, the people who, you know, are trying to downplay the severity of this. And again, like the one thing I reiterate to you, and I think I know I've told you about this one status I read where this person who I'm friends with on Facebook had referenced, you know, her – how her grandfather was talking about, like, prior pandemics and stuff about how, you know, he's, like, you know, basically not letting it control your life. It's like, dude, like, there are people who are still having to live normally, like a lot of these frontline workers, who are seeing just horrible crap. And it's like, you get to just kind of chill and, you know, hang back. And, I mean, you're bitching that you can't go out to dinner, you know, like you normally do every week, or that this and that are suffering. It's like, you shouldn't be mad at the government for instilling the restrictions. You should be mad at the government for not taking care of people in the way that they can all afford to just hang back and wait for this thing to pass. They should be mad at the government for not supporting and not giving enough in the stimulus package the first time to support small businesses and restaurants and theaters and all those types of places. You should be mad at the government for not having things in place to deal with it. You shouldn't be upset that it's like, oh, well, they're forcing us to do this stuff. They're doing what they should be doing on that front and probably should be doing more. Mm-hmm. And it's that to me is what's so angry. It's like you're getting mad at the government for trying to do or put things in place to, you know, to contain this. But you're it's like they're getting mad at them for the wrong thing. It's like, who cares if the only people dying from this are people with pre-existing conditions? They shouldn't be dying at all. At least, the number of the people dying should be drastically lowered if the right things weren't in place to deal with this. And there should have been steps taken where it's like, okay, we shut everything down for 3 months. We provide enough income for those small businesses so that they don't go bankrupt during those 3 months. Mm-hmm. We put things in place for the people who do have to work so that there's some semblance of normalcy there, and you go that way. You don't spend months denying this, and then all of a sudden, right when it gets at its worst, be like, oh, yeah, we should probably do something about this. You know, like, they're getting mad at the government for the wrong thing. And to all the libertarian people out there who are trying to make this seem like this is, like, their worst nightmare come to life, honestly, shut up. Seriously, shut up. I'm sick and tired of seeing that libertarian BS when it comes to this stuff. Like, I understand you don't want the government to control all things, but the libertarian mentality is not built to handle a crisis like this. Their method for handling a crisis is basically every man for himself. You don't like that? Go somewhere else. But, like, you have to understand that in moments like this, it isn't a time for this petty BS. It's just not the time for it.
Yeah, we haven't done a good job of putting things aside for the greater good, except for when Congress finally came to a resolution for the new stimulus bill. And obviously there's a ton of garbage in there. I've seen some posts and looked at some of it. But the brunt of it that everybody was really focused on was the one-time payment of $600 for people who made under a certain amount of money. I think it was like $75,000 for couples that made under a certain amount of money. It would be $1,200 because it's two people getting $600. And I think it's $600 for every kid, which has me scrambling.
I was going to say, the way they put it was like a family of four, it would be $2,400.
Yeah.
Four times 600.
I'm trying to find two more kids on my end. I need a PlayStation 5. But not all jokes aside, the issue with a lot of Americans that I've been reading and what I've been hearing, because, you know, I work in a locale that a lot of the adult population are below average education, manual laborers, small business owners. I mean, the entire town is built around small business, honestly, to the point where nobody's open on fucking Mondays because they all take Mondays off for some reason in the town. So there's no places. The only places open in the town that I work at on Mondays are chains. So, like, obviously, like your fast food places and stuff, and like a Family Dollar General, etc. But if you're looking for the mom and pop and things like that, everybody's closed on Monday, and they promote their small business a lot in that town, and it is a ghost town now because people have had to, you know, shut down because they can't afford to operate without customers and the restrictions. And it annoys me that people are blaming, like, the governor and stuff like that. These are things that have to be done for the greater good. Nobody wants to see, or you would assume nobody wants to see people go out of business. Like, the economy is extremely important. But here we are with this bill. It's supposedly bipartisan. I know at one point they were saying it ain't going to happen anytime soon. And then Mitch McConnell in a power play over the last, 2 weeks has just kind of flipped the script. You'd almost think he was running for president. But he's pretty much changed his narrative. The House and Senate came to a resolution, and we got stimulus package 2.0. And I think it was night before last, in a random video in the middle of the night or something like that, Trump announced, I don't know when he did it. Maybe I just didn't see it till the middle of the night. But anyway, Trump made a video basically saying that the stimulus package was trash and that he wasn't going to sign it. So we are now in a situation where it looks like the roles have switched. It's like a heel turn in pro wrestling. Trump is now saying things that the Democratic candidate support. So all along, him and Nancy Pelosi were friends. You know, it's kind of weird. He's like, you know, this is 600 isn't enough. And I agree with that. I think that 600 is not enough. I think 600 would have been enough if they had extended it on the back of the original plan. But we are, about 4 or 5 months since that plan ended, you know? People haven't got, like, $600 ain't going to cover the back pay. And I think that's what a lot of people are worried about. But either way, he says families need $2,000. And now echoes are coming from Elizabeth Warren supported it. Nancy Pelosi is supporting it. And today the House Republican Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy had a call today with House Republicans basically explaining how they were going to not support the $2,000 payments. Funniest thing ever, somebody on the call was telling or leaking the information to the New York Times, and the New York Times was live tweeting the information during that call. How hilarious is that?
You know, I got to say, to see Trump pivot on that, I think it actually makes sense given the timing. Because if you think about it, McConnell came out not that long ago and openly acknowledged, you know, Joe Biden as the next president of the United States. And I got to tell you, in Trump's mind, because he is that petty, I could see him legitimately getting on board with this, if for any other reason than to make the Republicans look like idiots. And when you have, because I follow both Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on Facebook, and I got to tell you, even Bernie Sanders put out a status that was like, hey, all the Democrats are pretty much united in this, behind this $2,000 payment. So Mitch McConnell and Republicans, balls in your court. You know, like, they're not, they don't care, I think, what this is. I think this is Trump's way of being like, all right, fine. What's the way I can make him look stupid? And this is a pretty good way. I mean, granted,
yeah.
I mean, I don't like the idea that, again, and I think this speaks to the notions of this Washington elitism, where you have ultimately them using something like this as a bargaining chip, when it's like, dude, there are people suffering. It doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. There are people financially suffering out there. If you can do more for them like that in the terms of a payment, then do it. That should be a completely bipartisan thing. So if they have the capability to pay more, pay more. There are people who need that money, more than $600. So if you can do it, do it. But I mean, as far as Trump's motivation, that's what I see that motivation coming from. It's just spite. Because a lot of the Republicans who I think he was kind of hoping would, you know, continually back him all the way with his, you know, attempts to refuse to concede, they're now starting to concede and try to return to some sense of normalcy. I think this is his way of basically sticking his middle finger up.
Yeah, most definitely. I don't think Trump has the capacity to want to help people without there being something in it for him, basically.
Yep.
And we're seeing that in his winding down of his presidency with the pardons and things like that. Like, it's there's some good in there. I will say there are some pardons that he's done that I would say make him look good. And most of that comes from the lady that he brought out during the Republican National Convention, and I think Kim Kardashian helped her get released. It's cases that she had brought to his attention, and he's doing. But again, it gets his name out there, and it makes him look good. That's why he's doing it. As far as telling, like, $2,000, I mean, it's a large amount of money, and I get it. The money's got to come from somewhere. We're already in debt as a country, so I don't know where it's coming from. With just $600 per person and per child, it was $166 billion in direct checks. Now, we're talking about three times that amount. Three and a half times that amount, basically.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money, man. That's a lot of money. I was joking with somebody the other day. I was like, now we see why he's went bankrupt. He's just asking for money to be spent that we honestly probably don't have. And I will say this too, there is some trash in that stimulus package that has nothing to do with COVID, but we know how Congress works, and that's pretty much how it's always been. But if they allocated some of that money, they probably could afford to pay the $2,000 per person, but everybody's got their interest in it and so forth and so on. That's fine. So where do we go from here, though? Because I'm getting a strong feeling that this is – remember in our last show, I talked about how I think that it's hilarious that the Republicans made a deal with the devil, and now the devil is destroying their party. I think this is it right here. This is the showdown, the final straw. When Mitch McConnell turned his back on Trump and acknowledged Joe Biden, Trump's full petty force is now in play. If he vetoes and they go behind his back and they overrule his veto, his base will never let that go.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do, man? I mean, again, our country is stuck. And people are dying, and I'm not trying to downplay or be dramatic, but people are dying and struggling. But people are dying, and the people that are left behind, who were trying to take care of them or their loved ones, are struggling, absolutely struggling. And people are crying for help, and our leaders can't figure out a way to to come to a common ground to help people. That's crazy to me. This is, again, this is not what America's supposed to be. We are, again, we're a third world country. I've been saying that for what, like a month now, but this is the type of shit that I see in third world countries. He's more concerned with the pardon and overturning the election than COVID assistance. I mean, give me something. Like, not me personally. I mean, I'm doing fine. My family's doing fine. Hell, if I got a stimulus amount of money, we would put it towards a house and stuff like that. Like, we're not out here just. I'm not honestly gonna buy a PS5 with the money, but I'm just saying there are people who really need help. I work with a lot of these people, my population. In my job, a lot of the kids and their parents are in that area that really need help, and they're not getting it. And like I said, it's just a matter of time before it just blows up.
So I actually watched something with one of the websites that I know does a lot of they do satirical stuff, but they actually give some very good objective commentary where they've been very critical of it. And they did this sort of holiday episode today that really hit home and I think ties into what you're talking about, where they talk about, what a Biden presidency is ultimately going to mean. And, they had this whole bit where they had sort of like the kids' puppet for the Christmas spirit that's supposed to try to, bring up the things about the holidays, about how we should be happy that, the more dangerous guy is no longer president and that we are going to be moving back to some sense of normalcy come January 20th. And what the guy was illustrating and talking about was that how Biden is already kind of setting up a cabinet that is supposed to be, reaching out to the Republican side and, trying to work with them and stuff like that. And it all looks good on paper, but what his point was, and I've been somebody who has always been of that same mindset, building bridges and reaching out. And what he kind of reiterated was just something that I've sort of touched on a little bit, which is the politics is normal that we're trying to return to with, especially, with Biden coming in. That's what led to Trump in the first place. And he kind of talks about, he's like, I understand what the sentiment is about reaching across the aisle to Republicans and working with them. But his counterpoint to that is, why would we continue to work with them? This was a party that has already demonstrated that when push comes to shove, they are more than willing to do whatever it takes to retain their grip on power. They are willing to do, there were 106 Republican members of the House of Representatives that signed on to that amicus curiae brief in support of Trump's that case with the Supreme Court. That is mind-blowing to me. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes to where we go from here and the things we need to keep in mind, the Republican Party needs to get its crap together. It really does. We keep talking about reaching across the aisle and working with these guys, but think about the people you're working with. You are trying to work with people who, the minute their shoes on the other foot, are going to do everything they can to screw you over. And then you also have the problem with the Democratic Party, where they are continually ignoring their more liberal base that is younger, the Generation Z, that is growing more and more frustrated with the centrist politics because it's not getting anything done. And I'm wondering where it's going to come. My brother's theory on this is that, maybe we're going to start to see the formations of a third party, because that's what it's coming to. And I'm wondering how that party is going to look. I'm wondering if you're going to start to see the more moderate Democrats and the more traditional Republicans coming together to make up the Republican Party, the more progressive people taking over the Democratic Party, and then the people who, support Trump forming the third party. Or you're going to see the Republican Party get consumed by Trump, the Democratic Party getting made up of moderate Democrats and traditional Republicans, and then the progressives forming their own third party. But what I think we need to go from here, and the thing we need to reckon with, is this moderate middle of the aisle crap isn't working anymore. It's not. If anything, it's just leading to more stagnation. And like you've said, even outside of COVID, even if COVID was never a thing, even if this pandemic never happened, it doesn't change the reality that a lot of Trump support in those areas in the Midwest are dying communities. They're communities that need assistance. They're seeing their way of life go down the crapper, and no one's helping them. And that needs to be rectified. Like, whether you like it or not, it has to be. Those communities are not doing well, and they haven't recovered since probably as far back as the first recession under Bush.
If I'm a Republican right now, and I'm serving, I would be very worried, because again, the party's agenda is not Trump's agenda, and you can look at the rallies in Georgia. People just want to talk about Trump. They don't care about the runoff. And if the Republicans lose Congress or lose the Senate, they won't have any control over Congress because the Democrats still control the House. So we would have a fully Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, which if we had talked about this 4 years ago, it was their worst nightmare. It was their worst nightmare up until Trump lost. And then it's like they all kind of forgot what the purpose was. And again, he's turned the party up on his head, man. I don't know how long it'll take for them to recover, if they can ever recover from this. And it doesn't look like he's going to give them any support. The problem that I have with the third party forming is that it's probably going to be a Trump party.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I see that as a more realistic possibility.
I was telling somebody today, like when I drive through Louisa and I see all the Trump stuff up, and I look around and see people still wearing like MAGA hats and things like that, I'm like, it's really about to become the New Age Confederate symbol. Like, people are gonna still rock their flags and rock their hats and support what they believed in because of the movement, but in actuality, like, you're not a winner, so why are you still rocking, still supporting it like that? That idea is dead, is gone, but they won't. I don't think they'll ever let it go.
Well, you know what's interesting. I had a friend of mine. Right around the time Trump got elected, he actually sent me this article that the Washington Post did that was actually really interesting, where it actually drew parallels, and this kind of ties into what we're talking about. It actually showed who Trump's parallel is in American history, and it's not really who you would think it would be. It was actually it was the presidency of Zachary Taylor. Zachary Taylor was a guy who ran for the Whig Party, and this was right before the Republican Party had even formed. And right now, at that point in the country, the crucial issue was the issue of slavery. At that time, you had the Democrats and you had the Whigs. Well, the Whig Party was divided. And the Whig Party was divided because of the issue of slavery. You had a growing sentiment amongst the Northern Whigs that they wanted to oppose slavery. Not only did they want to oppose slavery, but they wanted to basically embrace the abolitionist movement. You also had Southern Whigs who didn't want to do that, but weren't Democrats. So they were faced with an issue. And this kind of seems very similar to what the Republicans were looking at the time of Trump's nomination, where you have a growing number of the evangelical population and some of those more right-wing movements that are now starting to take over the party versus the traditional Republicans. Well, what they decide on is this guy, Taylor. And the reason they decided on him was he was a minor celebrity because he was a war hero in the Mexican War. They figured that he would pacify the Southern Whigs because he's from Tennessee, so he's not going to be an abolitionist. But at the same time, the guy was kind of an idiot. And the Northern Whigs were like, well, hell, if we wanted to run abolitionist legislation by him, he'd probably sign it without looking. So that was the guy they decided on. And he ended up getting elected. But the northern Whigs who formed, you know, who wanted to embrace the abolitionist movement, ended up breaking off, forming a party called the Free Soil Party. They lost, but then they ended up reforming again into the Republican Party. So that division and that deal with the devil that was made saw the splintering of a party into two, and the Whig Party ended up disappearing. And they were saying that in a way, if history is known to repeat itself, if we were to see that parallel, that's where you're going to see it. And you're starting to kind of see it a little bit with the Republican Party. It's not as much at that crossroad. Like, there isn't necessarily that issue like there was with slavery, where it's going to ultimately drive that wedge. But what you're seeing is a big time divide. Like, you talk about how Trump has overtaken the party. Well, that same friend who forwarded that kind of pointed out, he's like, I used to be a registered Republican. He goes, what ends up happening is all of a sudden we've looked around and the people that you're seeing who are now starting to represent the Republican Party, they've overtaken the people who were like the Reagan era Republicans.
Yeah.
And they had absolutely no idea. All Trump has done is exploited that and showed just how deep those roots go. So Trump's parallel with Taylor is kind of running that similar course, where he ultimately became the deal with the devil candidate, where they figured he's going to pacify the people who want to push farther right, and he's going to be the guy that we can just all unite behind just to ensure that Hillary doesn't get elected. Well, the problem is Trump is now forcing that party to start to have to make a choice, because he is constantly pushing ideas and legislation that goes against the traditional Republican values that are like the Reagan era ones, and he's now embracing the much more radical side of it. So, I mean, if the history thing goes full circle, are we actually going to see that particular party split? Because of the two, I'm starting to see that there's divides in both, but I'm thinking it's deeper in the Republican side.
Yeah, and the thing is, Bernie could have divided the Democratic Party, I think, because there's a lot of people who thought that he should have won the primary against Hillary. And there's a lot of people that wanted him to be the president, the Democratic candidate for presidency this year. But he never came out. He wasn't as big on motivating his base to not support the overall idea of democracy or the Democrats. Trump has shown that at the end of the day, if you're not with him, you're against him. And that goes for his party as well, because he's turned on Mitch, which Mitch, I guess, essentially turned on him first. But he's got a lot of like spineless people that still want to back him. So I'm very curious to see, because Mitch McConnell has already asked that they go ahead and certify the Electoral College vote. Is it the 6th, I think, is what it is?
Yeah, January 6th.
Yeah, so January 6th, which is in 2 weeks. But there's still rumblings of people who are planning, like Trump's planning something, you know, like to kind of put a wrench in that. So I'm curious to see what will happen. And again, if in fact they butt heads, the Republican Party and Donald Trump, the Republican Party will lose. He's too powerful now. He's too far gone. And it's nobody's fault but their own. They helped create this monster, you know? So
they did.
It's nobody's fault but their own. There was one thing. Oh, man, I don't know how I forgot. We got 10 minutes left. But I don't know how I forgot to bring this up, because this was the real major news, and it's still not getting enough attention. We got hacked. The government got hacked.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of all this craziness, the government got hacked. So my Tropico game, I wanna let everybody know, because people probably are curious. I bring it up every time we do a show. But I beat the Tropico game. And at the end, I had the unify the world, to unify the two superpowers, which at that time was Russia and the United States, and then also get the European Union on board, China on board, and then the countries of the Middle East on board. So I say all that to say that up until that last mission, I was as Trump as I could possibly be. And at no point, even on a video game, did my government get hacked. We're in real life. Real life. And we got hacked. And he, like, the State Department, FBI, CIA, everybody who is anybody who has information about this attack is saying that it's Russia. Trump is still like, we don't know that. We don't know the truth. We don't know all the facts. Yes, the logo of the hackers was Zangief from Street Fighter, but we don't know if it's in fact Russian. You know, they left us a couple bottles of vodka, but we don't know if it's Russia. Like, what more do you need? And I'm sure he'll probably say something. Hey, look, I asked Vladimir Putin. He said it wasn't him, and that's fine with me. Like, that's what he said. Remember, that's what he said the last time he, like, stopped the press conference and was like, did you order that? Did you do that? And, of course, Putin was like, no. And then he's like, see? He said he didn't do it, and I believe him. Like, what the – bro, Russia is our enemy.
Yeah, well, they've been our enemies since the Cold War. That's why I was like, everyone's like, well, the, you know, Putin's the strong leader and this and that. I'm like, did everybody literally forget, like, the Soviet Union's existence and the Red Scare and all that stuff? Not that far flung, although I got to be honest. I'm actually amazed he was defending it, because even Putin came out and congratulated President Biden.
Yep.
So you figured he would have turned on him, too.
Man, Pat Robertson turned on him. I sent you that today. Vladimir Putin turned on him. Mitch McConnell turned on him. I mean, it's like I said, the walls are closing in. And if you look at his little, if you look at his circle that he's got now, as far as support goes, it's back to square one. He's got Michael Flynn, Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro. Like, they're back in the White House or back on the scene. And we forgot about our female Giuliani replacement, Sidney Powell's crazy tale. Like, man, they had a legitimate meeting.
I was thinking, by the way, don't most of those people have criminal records?
No, they got pardoned. No, they really did, though. Which also brings me to my next little joke that I had said to somebody, that Trump is basically the monopoly man. Everybody's getting out of jail free, and he's trying to give you a tax cut. It's like, dude, what the heck, man? But it's crazy. It's really crazy. Like, I feel like he's a crazy person right now who surrounded himself with more crazy people who are feeding him crazy ideas, to the point where they were discussing martial law. Now, I'm not an expert on it. But from what I was reading, it doesn't seem like they got any grounds for that. To even suggest it is ridiculous. I don't think martial law is something that fathers or the people who wrote the Constitution and came up with the set of rules that we have for our country, I don't think martial law was something that they ever wanted to be used to overthrow an election, because you know why? That's what third world countries do.
By the way, that specific act that you're referring to, the Insurrection Act, I think.
Yeah.
To give you some more recent examples of when that was used, it was used in the early 90s when, like, the LA riots were going down. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think there was another time in the aftermath of, like, a major hurricane that caused a lot of flooding. And, like, you know, caused a lot of, like, you know, chaos in the area. Like, those are the instances where that type of thing has either been close to being used or has actually been implemented. And the funny thing is, I'm like, if you were to ever use the ground of, like, you know, that kind of unrest to do it, it's like, it's mostly Trump supporters that are doing the unrest. Like, all the people who are kind of like anti-Trump have already kind of like, all right, well, you know, election's over, like, let's keep going. But it's like, it's Trump's people who are like continually doing the protest. It's like, so you're going to call martial law based on your own people?
They're protesting and they're still holding rallies. Give it up, people. Please give it up. But yeah,
hey, I already told you, I saw him in the train station before I came up to Connecticut, man. Like, I was out there at the train station at 9 a.m. There were a bunch of them walking around with the, you know, stop the steal signs and, you know, their Bud Light seltzers. I mean, they were out there.
I'm gonna try to get more details on exactly what his plan is going forward, if there is a plan. Because I will say this, since we got 3 minutes left, I'll close with this. I can't do CNN anymore, man. It is the most ridiculous shit now. It is the Fox News for liberals, man. It's so ridiculous. I'm looking at articles and stuff and trying to get real news and information, and they just talk about everything but what's really important. And I think people need to keep in mind and realize that we're entering a time where there's a lot of bias in our society. So I would implore people to continue to use different sources for information. I've started to do that more often. I use our IBN account to check some of the political Twitter, and I even got a subscription to the New York Times for a little trial just so I can get more information, man. I want to get into politics, which is why we started this show, because, again, I consider myself to be moderate. But the way things are going, man, I'm like, do I really want to be part of this childish shit? And why would I want to do that? Paul, you got any closing remarks or anything on your mind?
I will say this, that I think, especially as far as the direction of the show goes, one of the biggest things that we need to keep in mind going forward is that if Trump, you know, or at least I'm hoping at least once Trump leaves, the thing we have to keep in mind is, and the reality is, the only way to prevent him from running in 2024 is to make him seem irrelevant. And I hate to tell people, but the way to do that isn't to continually talk about him or dunk on him or do what the Obamas are doing with that show on Netflix that is ultimately going to make fun of Trump. You need to keep his name out of it by just, and I hate to say it, ignoring it. Like, if he makes an appearance at a college, don't protest it. Don't be there. Don't give it the attention. Because the more that you do and the more that his name stays relevant, the more likely it is he's going to make a serious comeback in 2024, among other factors, of course. But I think that's something that we all need to reconcile with, is that we think we're doing a service by continually ripping on this man once, you know, his presidency is over. And I've heard a lot of people say this, the most dangerous people are the ones who, or at least the ones who stay politically relevant, are the ones who continually find their way into the limelight after their time is over. And he's very, very, very good at doing that. And not enough people give him credit for it.
I will be shocked if he lives to run in 2024. Based on his health habits.
But the other thing I'll end on, as I said, my prediction is coming true for his first post-presidency plan. WWE Raw's ratings, man, are in the toilet. I guarantee you that's where he's going.
And when he does, we will definitely host a special show. I'll bring in Keith from Team Turnbuckle podcast and have him break down Trump's wrestling ability, because it's not his first time jumping on WWE, and their ratings are tanking for sure. And he'll take full credit for saving the show.
And he might actually not be wrong on that.
All right. Well, we will be back next week for another episode of Mod Pod. Again, I'll try to be as consistent as possible. We did cover a lot in this particular show. But it's only going to get more entertaining and scary and strange and weird as we get closer to the 6th and to Inauguration Day on the 20th. So if you're listening, stay tuned. We will continue to try to bring as much unbiased opinions as we possibly can to the show. Thank you, Paul.
All right, man. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.